Younger listeners may be surprised to hear this, but in the very recent past, it was common to evoke Mr. Rogers as a symbol of dorky wimpiness. A lot has changed over the past 10 years, with Fred Rogers being elevated to semi-ironic internet sainthood alongside Bob Ross, Steve Irwin, and Jim Henson. I think this largely happened because many extremely online millennials, myself included, saw Mr. Rogers as a nostalgic, wholesome counter-programming to the general atmosphere of cynicism, snark, and self-conscious edge that defines much of American pop culture, especially online. Mr. Rogers is, as I said, wholesome, which has become something of an internet cliche at this point. Mr. Rogers loves you unconditionally, and he doesn't judge you. The world would be less shitty if more people were like Mr. Rogers. That is not a controversial statement to make. The appeal of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood isn't hard to suss out. It was meant for preschoolers, after all. It is a low-stakes hangout where you are welcomed into a world of imaginary play and songs without conditions or expectations. Mr. Rogers didn't try to teach you how to count or spell simple words, but he did bring in people who spoke about their lives. He tried to cultivate empathy and emotional intelligence. He also didn't shy away from difficult topics when they arose, often nimbly discussing them on a toddler's level without condescension. That's a tough balance to maintain, and very few programs for preschoolers can be argued as being in the same weight class as Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. A recent show that has frequently drawn plaudits of being an heir apparent is Bluey, an Australian animated program centering on a family of anthropomorphic dogs. In fact, it may be possible that parents like Bluey more than their children do in many instances. We'll be going into the how and why over the course of this recording, and I wrote that intro without realizing that this is going to be specifically, like, about one character. This is one of those character study things where we'll be examining the run of the show through their lens, and that's going to be Muffin this time. So, yeah, this is about Muffin. My name is Ryan, this is a real deep dive. Joining me on this one is my sister Cheryl.
Hello.
And my brother Sylvan.
Hi, I'm back.
If you are acquainted with Sylvan in the real world, you probably already know that Sylvan picked this one, and this was kind of inevitable.
Yeah, I have been comfort binging Bluey.
Yeah, how many times have you run through the series?
I don't know, probably 4 or 5 at this point.
Damn, like, I suppose something had to break your DuckTale cycle at some point, and it was Bluey.
There's 3 seasons, they're in short digestible chunks. Whatever, it's fine.
Yeah, you did say you often use nostalgic preschooler programming to help you fall asleep, like Eureka's Castle and David the Gnome and stuff, but that's like stuff that was contemporaneous for our childhood, and Bluey is the here and now.
I actually don't use Bluey as part of the sleep thing because I pay too much attention to it.
Alright, well, why does Bluey appeal to you?
So one of the main focuses of Bluey is gentle parenting, which our parents' generation didn't believe in. That's not really something that boomers practiced. It's something that millennials are largely doing now with their kids, I feel like. And it has a very comforting, but also kind of, like, wistful kind of energy to it. It's, like, a way to... A lot of people talk about, like, the therapeutic value of Bluey for them. Like, it helps you sit with any unresolved childhood emotions that you have wriggling around and kind of give that inner child a little hug.
So, Cheryl, you had never seen a single episode of Bluey before we sat down and watched these 6 in a row. What's your immediate reaction?
So, halfway through the first episode, I was like, oh, okay, this is like Steven Universe for like the younger siblings. It's doing emotional intelligence. That's awesome. But then I went through the whole episode, and I experienced very much what Sylvan was just talking about. I felt my back tense up, and, like, immediately I was back to being a 6-year-old, like, mediating between my older sibling and my younger sibling. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, there have definitely been episodes I've watched where I've been like, I feel a strong need to go apologize to Cheryl and Sarah right now.
You said that you personally identify with Bluey, and that's why you disliked Bluey. Like, while I was setting up, you were just like, the first season I disliked Bluey, and I didn't know why. And then the second time, just came to you.
Yeah, when I first started, I'm like, you're not meant to dislike Bluey. Like, the show is told from her perspective, and I think she is likable. But she reminds me a lot of how I was when I was a kid. She has a strong sense of right and wrong, and wanting things to be correct all the time, and it gets her into social trouble, especially because she can't understand the developmental stages that her younger relatives are at. So they're not behaving the way that they're supposed to, as far as she knows, but she's a bigger kid than them. And in the show with the gentle parenting, the adults in her life help her understand and take better care of her younger sibling and cousins. And I didn't get that. When we were kids, we were just kind of thrown in rooms with all of our toys. And, you know, which was like social norms of the days, like no hate on our parents for that. But they didn't really monitor how we were interacting with each other. So I was a bully, and I was never trying to be a bully. I just didn't know how to talk to other kids, really.
I mean, one episode is explicitly about that thing you just talked about. So why did you pick Muffin to be our central focus?
Well, part of it was because we cobbled this together at the last minute, and I knew if we were going to do one of the more central characters like Bandit, we will definitely be doing a Bandit-focused episode at some point. I was going to need some time to sit and think and look at the hundreds of episodes to pick six. Muffin doesn't have a lot of appearances. She's a side character and a fan favorite. Everybody loves Muffin.
Yeah, I love Muffin.
And speaking of which, Sylvan gave me six episodes that we were going to be doing, and the first was The Sleepover. Why did you pick Sleepover?
Well, again, I only cut out, like, three episodes from the list of Muffin's appearances, so it was pretty easy to narrow it down to six. But The Sleepover, I think, is a good one because the emotional lesson it's trying to teach you is very much that if you're one of the bigger kids, you should think about how your games and your wants are affecting the younger kids. Muffin is overtired and needs to go to bed, and at first, Bluey and Bingo are resisting that because it's a sleepover and they were promised the chance to stay up late.
Yeah, I didn't bother to copy-paste episode synopses because Bluey episodes are 7 to 9 minutes long, and...
I got it covered.
Yeah, Sylvan already relayed what it was. In order to prolong to a promised bedtime, Bluey and Bingo start playing a game called Restaurant that they think is going to allow them to sort of run out the clock, more or less. Eventually, Bluey has the revelation that, hey, forcing this overtired Muffin to go through the motions with the flamingo while she's screaming about how coconuts have water in them...
Yeah, she's might actually not be, being cruel to Muffin.
Yeah, that might not be ethical. This was my first exposure to Muffin, and I was just like, so is Muffin just going to be Ralph Wiggum for the whole run of the series?
And no, no. I think the best comparison between Muffin's set of healers and Bluey's healers is with the Rugrats. Pickles is the Stripe, Trixie, and Muffin and Socks have some, like, Charlotte, Drew, and Angelica vibes to them.
Their relationship is way healthier than the Pickles.
Everything about the healers is healthier than the Pickles, but some of the dynamics are there.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I put Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood in the intro because I think there are some obvious parallels based on Bluey's reputation. I haven't seen that many episodes, and I am bringing up other cartoons over the course of this dialogue, but yeah, it didn't occur to me to bring up Rugrats, and yeah, I can see how it tracks. But the next one is Veranda Santa.
Ugh, this one gave me a lot of unresolved childhood feelings. I'm very much Bluey in this one.
Yep.
Yeah, thanks.
You grew from that. You're not that anymore.
The basic gist of the episode is that it's the night before Christmas, and the kids get it in their head that Santa, since there's no chimney, will be entering on the veranda. So they start playing this game called Veranda Santa, where all the kids and
Bandit
are taking turns pretending to be Santa, leaving presents, so on and so forth. And eventually, Muffin's little sibling, Socks, starts participating in the game, but Socks is 1 year old, so Socks isn't quite fully developed, and ends up biting Bluey over the course of the game. Bluey, who feels that a severe wrong has been done to her, decides to not give Socks a present when it's her turn to be Veranda Santa again, and that just breaks Socks' little doggo heart.
Bluey's big thing here is that when you have done something wrong, you're supposed to apologize for it, but Socks is 1 year old and cannot talk yet. So Socks is incapable of apologizing. So, yeah, Bandit and Chili, Bluey's parents, help her understand understand that since Sox is little, they're supposed to be helping her learn things and have to meet her where she's at. She cannot apologize, and you're not going to be mean to her for that.
Yeah, the emotional climax of the episode is when Bluey's just like, if I'm not nice, I'm not going to get presents from Santa. And they're like, that's not the reason you're being nice to people. And they explain it by, like, showing Sox just sitting by themselves and being all sad. And Bluey's like, oh, okay.
In that moment, childhood just discovering what empathy is.
So, to flip this to us relating to things, when I was, I think, 4 or 5. Yeah, Sarah was 2, so I was 5. Sarah hit me over the head with a plastic Little Tykes golf club and laughed at me when I was upset by it because it hurt. So I went to get Mom because justice needed to be wrought in that situation. And I got punished, not Sarah, because Mom kept explaining, Sarah's a baby. She didn't know what she did. And I kept pushing it. So that's why I got in trouble for that. And I wish gentle parenting had been a thing back then because, you know, that situation was a good opportunity for learning.
You learned it eventually because it's been like 30 freaking years and that's still with you.
Yeah, I didn't learn it at 5 though. At 5 I was still like, but why didn't she have to apologize? This sucks. Babies are stupid.
Babies
that's
are
what I took away from it.
Stupid babies need the most attention.
They do.
Alright, the next episode is Library.
I feel like, hang on, I just need to clarify, the younger sibling we're talking about has a master's degree now, so, like, if she's listening to this episode, you're not a stupid baby.
I'm sure she also thought about the plastic golf club thing, because I did not let that go. I still wanted an apology for years afterwards.
And Sarah will know that that was a Simpsons reference. Anyways, Library. Muffin's going over to hang out with her cousins again, and they're playing Library. But on the way, Muffin's father tells her, after he runs an orange light, or a yellow light if you're in America, that Muffin is the most special kid in the world. This leads Muffin to believe that Muffin doesn't have to obey the rules of the library. Muffin just starts terrorizing, just making loud noises and eating the toddler stuffed animals during story time and checking.
Stealing all the books.
Stealing all the books, so they have to go through Bandit's law book that they don't understand to read to the toddlers.
Okay, so this is actually an interesting detail that I found out through Bluey TikTok, because they don't explicitly state it in any of the episodes that have aired in the United States. Bandit is an archaeologist because he's a dog, so he works with bones.
Specifically, he's a sniffer dog.
And when you see his home office in some of the episodes, that's when you'll see the archaeological stuff out and about in there. And Chili's job is that she works at an airport because that's also where dogs work.
That's very cute.
Isn't it adorable?
Anyways, when Bluey complains to the parental figures, Chili reassures her that, you know what, let Muffin play however she wants. But when they eventually figure out that Muffin is taking advantage of a particularly self-serving reading on the whole special thing.
Yeah, Stripe backpedals and has an adorable chat with Muffin where he explains that she is not the most special kid in the world to anyone except her own parents. And she just accepts it.
You remember how I told you that you were special? Yes. Well, you're not. Oh. That was such a good line.
She announces to Bluey and Bingo, I'm not special anymore.
Hooray!
Now you can play properly.
So they play Library properly, and you know what? Stripe slows to a stop at the next orange light.
So I feel like this one's message was more for the parents than the kids, about, like, being careful about how you phrase things to the kids and thinking through how they're gonna take it, and also, when they are fighting with each other, get everyone's side.
Just make me think of my job, but that's okay. Come on.
Well, like, when Mr. Rogers told all the children that they were special, that meant, in a way, that every human being is inherently invested with a certain degree of dignity and deserve to be treated with a baseline level of respect. It doesn't mean that you get to play Library improperly.
That's right, damn it.
All right, the next episode is Facey Talk.
This is definitely the best one.
I love facey talk, yeah. I don't know that there are any deep messages. Like, they kind of try for something about how you shouldn't hog, but mostly it's just an excuse for a really fun romp and a bit of, I feel like, fun animation direction from having the split screen and seeing what's going on everybody's phones.
Essentially, Muffin is FaceTiming with Bluey in the drawing on the screens, but when it becomes Sox's turn to draw on the screen, Muffin decides no. And despite Stripe's best efforts to get Muffin to be fair, she won't go along with it. So she gets put in timeout, but then she steals her dad's phone and starts drawing on that in the third string because she needs to finish her cowboy hat.
And it's a really good cowboy hat.
Yeah, she's three. She's pretty good.
Yeah, this leads to an ever-escalating chase sequence, and eventually Muffin's mother gets involved.
Well, they run through the bathroom while she's on the toilet.
Yes, and she's like, we're not doing timeout anymore. I read an article, and they go back and forth and start squabbling, and Bandit interjects. He's like, hey, why don't you put that on mute until they finish their chat?
So one of the things I really liked about this episode is the two little girls that are having a problem sharing. We also get it split with their parents that are having a problem sharing about parenting style. Like, the mom wasn't respecting him and his want to be part of the parenting. So it's really fun when it does resolve while it's on mute, because that's shortly right after it all resolves.
Also, there's some debate on Bluey's side over whether or not they should be helping Muffin, because Muffin's being bad. By the time that the parents are on the same page, they're like, oh no, they're hiding behind the couch, Muffin, run!
Well, it's because they teamed up. You gotta keep it even.
Yeah, it's not fair anymore. Bluey is all about fairness.
In the end of the episode, Muffin drops Stripe's phone over the porch railing and it falls into the pool and dies. And then she accepts her time out.
Just wonderful perspective shots. As Sylvan put out, the split screen gave many opportunities for visual storytelling. Well done all around.
I love, too, when she starts, like, mocking her dad by putting the monkey face and the bikini on him.
Yeah, I want to see the storyboards for this one. All right, next one we're talking about is Muffin Cone.
Oh yeah, that's another one of my favorites. So Muffin has a problem with sucking her thumb, and Trixie puts her in a cone to keep her from doing it, which prevents her from being able to play the games that Bluey and Bingo are trying to do, the sandwich shop, because she can't see anything.
And she tries to make a toddler sandwich.
And this is mirrored in the adults with the fact that Trixie has set the goal for herself that she's going to eat more healthfully, but then she also succumbs to temptation and eats an entire bowl of chips by herself.
Zero impulse control.
Very much a Rugrats thing, where it's paralleling the what the babies are up to.
So after she is caught out with all of the cheese, the Dorito cheese around her mouth, she admits that it might be time to take Muffin's cone off. But by this point, Chili has had a discussion with Bluey and Bingo about finding ways to include Muffin, and they've managed to make the cone fun.
Yeah, they start playing Traffic Cone and Ballerina and various other things that incorporate the cone into the play.
The sunflower was the cutest part.
It was so adorable, although I do like Muffin Traffic Cone.
Thanks for hatching, Sunflower. We love you.
So at the end of the episode, Muffin is clearly trying to get the cone put on before her next play date.
And the last one we're talking about is Granny Mobile, which is apparently a fan favorite.
Yes, every time I have mentioned Bluey in real life to another human being, we end up talking about Granny Mobile. So there's a running thing throughout the show. There are multiple episodes where the girls play grannies. Bluey and Bingo are always Janet and Rita, and this is the first time Muffin is depicted playing grannies with them. The kindly healer neighbor Doreen is having a yard sale because she's trying to raise money for a vacation she wants to take to the Barrier Reef.
Needs to get there before it's destroyed.
Yeah, they don't bring that up in the show. Doreen is very much a people pleaser, and any haggling that is done, everybody always lowballs her and she just accepts it. So meanwhile, the girls see her, I guess, probably dead husband's scooter. Like, Len is mentioned in passing, and he's not around, so, and she's selling the scooter, so she's probably a widow. But they call the scooter a granny mobile, and they start playing with it. and they've each assigned themselves types of grannies. Bluey's going to be a kind granny, Bingo is going to be a can't-hear-anything granny, and the only other type of granny they can think of is a grouchy granny, so that's going to Muffin.
And Muffin plays grouchy granny with aplomb.
Oh my god, she's so good. One of my favorite parts is when she just starts yelling at Bandit and calls him Bugalugs, and he goes, am I Bugalugs? And he just goes along with it. He starts pushing her around on the scooter.
There's no battery in it. That's not a problem. Bugalugs will do it.
And while they're playing a real grouchy granny, a little pug comes over and starts bullying Doreen and then decides that she's going to buy the scooter. And as grouchy granny, Muffin haggles with her and gets her to pay, what was it, $1,200?
Yeah.
And the pug had been initially saying she was only going to pay $100.
Yeah, and Chili tries to stop Muffin over it, and Doreen's like, no, let's see this play out. And Doreen is the one who has a character arc, because then she starts haggling afterward. She learns the lesson.
Sometimes you gotta be a jerk, because people suck.
Well, I think that most people are kind, considerate, and want to do the best that they can, but there are enough motherfuckers in the world to throw things off.
And you gotta be able to stand up for yourself.
And the motherfuckers are usually seeking the highest positions of power, and they're therefore disproportionately represented in our leadership.
I also feel like people do try to, like, push and get deals whenever they can, especially if something is quote-unquote used.
I mean, there was a recent glitch in a Domino's pizza giveaway where, essentially, if you entered a particular code that wasn't properly vetted by the software developers, you could order infinite free pizzas. And, as I said, most people just asked for, like, one or two free pizzas, but there were guys who were, like, trying to get as many as they could get away with, like, ordering 70 pizzas.
I feel like that's, like, a condition, though. Like, that has to immediately, like, hit, like, a pleasure center of your brain that you're just like, I need to get 100 free pizzas.
I think that somebody is, like, trying to go viral on TikTok.
Are you sure there weren't any Ninja Turtles involved in this event?
I checked.
Go Ninja, go Ninja.
Also, at the end of the episode, Doreen offers Muffin anything she wants from the garage sale, and she picks a tea towel so that she can be a super granny.
Because who wants to be a grouchy granny?
Not if you can be a super granny. And they said the Spider-Verse movies have done themselves a disservice by not including Spider-Man yet.
Is that Aunt May?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Aunt May got bit by the spider in one of the universes and therefore becomes Spider-Man. Also, she manages to rescue Uncle Ben and becomes a superhero anyways, making her objectively better at being Spider-Man than all of the Peters.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%.
Anyways, moving on to the creation of Bluey. As we've mentioned before, this is an animated show and is therefore inherently collaborative, even by the standards of film, so calling one person the auteur is a bit of a misnomer, but if there is one, it's Joe Brum.
Showrunner, or...?
He got the ball rolling creatively, he's the showrunner, he's the head writer, so on and so forth.
Yep.
Yeah, I realize that the Wikipedia writing credits are simplified, but he's listed as the writer for every episode.
To be more realistic, he's probably heading the writing room and saying yay or nay to various ideas, and he's probably looking over the shoulders of the people doing storyboards.
You can tell, though, that there's that level of oversight, because the writing on this series is pretty tight. Like, a lot of the episodes reference each other. Things that show up as, like, major things come back later on as small details. Like, it's a lot more consistent with its in-universe everything than, you know, say, shows like The Simpsons.
Joe Brum is the primary creative engine behind Bluey. He's an animator from Queensland, and he has a long career working in British and Australian children's programming leading up to Bluey. His prior credits include Charlie and Lola, Tinga Tinga Tales, Ben and Holly's Little Kingdom, and Peppa Pig. Brum's time on Peppa Pig was very formative. It convinced him that creating an Australian replica of the show's format could be a solid elevator pitch. He started creating a short film on his own in his spare time as a proof of concept roughly in 2016. It was finished at the small Queensland-based animation studio Ludo and soon caught the attention of programming executives at the BBC and its Australian counterpart ABC. I feel compelled at this point to point out to my fellow ugly Americans that I am not referring to the American ABC television network. That is a privately owned TV station that is run by Disney. The Australian ABC is publicly funded, like the BBC. Its closest American analog is PBS. I felt compelled to highlight this because in America, we watch Bluey through Disney+. There's a source of confusion there. All right, and before the glitch came in, Sylvan was saying that Bluey has been altered in certain ways to make it more palatable to American audiences.
Yeah, I don't know too many details. I know we haven't gotten every episode, and I know that they've made some changes. It's distributed to us through Disney, so that is probably why.
And also before the glitch, I was like, well, they didn't change the orange light for us.
Oh, well, I didn't know that, yeah. I just thought it was funny that they didn't do that, but they're changing other things. So it makes you wonder, yeah, what they
are. What are they changing?
Because we're too dumb to understand what the sort, like the Philosopher's Stone is, but we can figure out orange lights.
Brum had a blue heeler dog named Bluey as a child. He chose an Australian cattle dog, aka a blue heeler, as the breed for his cartoon dog family, largely because he wanted Bluey to be very Australian in a cultural sense, and he wanted to pick an Australian animal that hadn't been done to death to a point where it's like a stereotype, such as a kangaroo or a koala.
Yeah, I've read that there's a lot of emphasis on making it feel very comfortably Australian without relying on stereotypes, and this shows up through a lot of the level of detail in the backgrounds, the episode settings, and like casual inclusion of Australian wildlife and plants and trees and everything.
Yeah, for those of you who are not aware, Queensland is semi-tropical, and Bluey uses many actual locations in the Brisbane area for its background shots.
Sorry, total aside, but when I think of koalas, I don't think of Australia. I think of Japan and that weird
because of
old
those animes.
Noozles!
Yes, during the 70s and 80s, Japan was obsessed with koalas. They increased diplomatic relations with Australia because they wanted koalas for their zoos. And there was a whole slew of Japanese pop culture that was very koala-centric. Including
Noozles. I loved Noozles.
So yeah, I think of space and Japan when I think of koalas before I think of Australia.
Anyways, ABC, Australia, was interested in Bluey at the jump, but Brum claimed that it was still tough to pitch the show since Bluey is the opposite of high concept. It is not an elevator pitch at all. It was apparently difficult to get the suits excited about cartoon dogs hang around and play silly pretend games for 8 minutes.
But it's so good!
Brum emphatically didn't want to go the Sesame Street route with structured skits and learning about the alphabet. He sees the central conceit of Bluey lying in the virtues of unsupervised play. Like, you could just leave the kids in the backyard and they'll build a little universe together. Elaborate rule books and expensive toys are unnecessary. And that made me think of a fairly recent report. I think it was in the New Yorker, but I'm not 100% on that, where they examined the past few years where there was a trend of highly specialized, specific, and expensive robot toys that would teach kids specific things. And they found that all of the research that said that this helped the kids learn things better was total horseshit. And that way, Fisher-Price is kind of going back to, you know, the basic stuff, like balls and little rings and stuff like that. You know, things that preschoolers can take and run with.
And I can definitely, obviously, that is a big part of Bluey. It is throughout the show. But I feel like for the first season, it's very focused on Bluey and Bingo and play. And then by the second season, they have picked up on the fact that the parents are watching the show with the kids, and the parents are more into it than some of the kids. By that season, Bandit and Chili are referred to by their first names more often than Mom and Dad, and they've become main characters.
I did notice that, because in a lot of shows and programs and pop culture that's from the kids' perspective, like A Christmas Story or Calvin and Hobbes, Mom's name is Mom.
There's a very cute episode, too, where Bluey does have to ask Chili what her non-mom name is.
Aww.
ABC secured $20,000 for a 7-minute pilot in 2017. After it was completed and shown, ABC and the BBC ordered 52 additional episodes for a first season. The BBC handled 30% of Bluey's funding in exchange for full control over the program's international distribution and merchandising rights. That was a pretty good deal for them.
yeah, yeah, like, this is working out.
Looking at Sylvan's...
I've got a bingo plush in my hands right now.
Bluey is animated in-house at Ludo in Fortitude Valley, Brisbane, with post-production done by freelancers in South Brisbane. A staff of about 50 people craft each episode from beginning to end. There are generally 15 episodes at various stages of progress at any given moment at Ludo. It generally takes roughly 2 months to hammer out a script. That kind of explains why they're so tightly bound, both in terms of internal structure and in continuity with each other. Somewhere between 500 to 800 drawings are made for a storyboard. This is then formed into a crude animatic, and the actors are recorded once the animatics are completed and there's something visual for them to react to. It usually takes about 4 weeks at this point for animators, background artists, designers, and layout teams to finish their work. From conception to completion, the typical episode of Bluey takes 3 to 4 months to make. Test screenings for Bluey occur on Friday. Over time, these have gradually grown into mass gatherings since everyone in the cast and crew started bringing their families along. Brum said that these are good for team morale and also serve as sort of informal focus groups since the toddlers in attendance are merciless critics.
That sounds adorable.
Bluey's crew worked remotely during COVID lockdowns with a skeleton crew of 3 people at the studio itself. Generally, there tend to be about 20 to 30 people in the building on a normal work day. Yeah, that brings me to the cast. First person I'm going to bring up here is David McCormack as Bandit.
Woo!
Yeah, up until this moment, he is best known for fronting Custard, an Australian indie rock band. He was only brought in to voice a few throwaway lines for incidental characters in the pilot, but eventually people decided that he should be Bandit in the pilot, and then it kind of went from there.
And Bandit becomes a more and more important character as the show goes.
Yeah, kind of like The Simpsons, where, like, you know, the first few seasons, it's Bart Mania, but then it becomes the Homer show.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people identify with Bandit or see him as, like, a parenting goal.
McCormack generally records his lines remotely from his home in Sydney or on the road while touring with Custard. He does not have any of the other voice actors or images to go with. He's just sort of reading his lines completely cold.
He's amazing at it.
He first met Melanie Zanetti, who voices Chili, when they were promoting Bluey on The Tonight Show.
Wow, that's crazy to me. They have such good chemistry for that.
You never can tell. I mean, we have mentioned on previous episodes on animation, it's generally better if they record as a sort of radio thing where everyone's able to react to each other, and I still hold on to that, but sometimes people are just talented. It is helped that he doesn't affect a voice. He is just using his normal speaking voice when he is Bandit. That's just what he sounds like.
I mean, fair, but, like, he's still acting and responding to situations. Like, well, I don't know. He's really good at conveying the emotions.
I also just really love that this guy who has a whole other career was there to do a couple side characters is like, no, I'll keep doing this and I'll find a way to make it work, damn it.
Now, it is officially the biggest thing he's ever been involved with. I mean, he'd have to be nuts to get off Bluey at this point.
Yeah, but, like, for season one, like, that must have been him believing in the project. Like, that wasn't, like, doing it for the fame.
I did hear something about him wanting to do something kid-focused because of kids.
Yeah. Oh, he has kids?
I don't know if that's reliable or not, but that's what I heard.
Okay. I mean, yeah, a lot of entertainers start thinking about doing children's stuff when they have to explain what daddy does for a living or what mommy does when she's not at home, and all they have are these adult dramas to draw from. It's like, you know what? It's time for me to be a cartoon gopher in a DreamWorks movie, I guess. McCormack didn't have much cartoon voice acting before Bluey, but offers started rolling in afterwards, believe it or not.
Oh, go figure.
Yeah, his most high-profile role besides Bandit is he's Orbo on Adventure Time, Fiona and Cake.
I am going to have to, when I rewatch that, listen now.
All right, next up is Melanie Zanetti as Chili, whom McCormack didn't meet until they were on Jimmy Fallon together.
So I will also say that, all things considered, because Chili also responds wonderfully to Bandit, so me and Sarah were just talking about this the other day. One of my favorite little things that I've noticed is Bandit puts his foot in his mouth sometimes when he's co-parenting with Chili, and she'll just do this face where she's like above the kids' heads, hoping they don't notice, and he immediately course corrects. So there is some voice acting involved in that, even though it's mostly a visual joke.
Zanetti has an extensive back catalog of voice roles. She graduated with a theater degree from the University of South Queensland in 2007, but soon moved from touring stage productions to film, TV, and voice acting. She has a lot of credits, but it's mostly on Australian stuff, so I didn't recognize it. Then we have Chris Brum as Nana Healer. She is Joe Brum's actual mother.
And Nana Healer's name is Chris.
Uncle Stripe is voiced by Dan Brum, who is Joe Brum's brother.
This is cute. Okay.
The kids, their voice actors are deliberately kept anonymous.
Good. I love that.
What we do know is that they are the children of cast and crew members.
Oh, yeah.
I was led to believe that it's a rotating crew, but like after watching 6 episodes of Bluey from across all 3 seasons, the voices are kind of consistent, so it isn't a different kid each episode, despite what I probably misinterpreted in when I was reading up on this.
Yeah, I had only ever read that, well, not all of the kids or their actors are withheld. Like, a lot of the classmates and stuff, they're actors, and they have name credits. But Bluey and Bingo specifically, their names haven't been released.
Yeah, they sound like regular-ass kids, and that's probably what they are. It made me think of the casting decisions for all of those 1960s Charlie Brown specials, where they just got inexperienced natural kid actors from elementary school to come in and say their lines, and often they were so young and inexperienced that Bill Melendez had to, like, have them sound out each syllable of a $5 word phonetically and then fix it in the edit.
I feel like I have nothing, like, to go on research-wise for this, but this is just my sense from having watched the series through so many times. I feel like they must do a lot of playing with the kids when they're filming the episodes, because the way the little kids laugh is just absolutely charming and sounds like real baby laughing. And then I also think that they probably reuse some of the laughs in other episodes, too. But I imagine there's lots of, like, making funny faces at them and doing spontaneous things to get them to giggle. And then there's, like, a very particular, oh, that Bluey does when she's disappointed that is also, like, very authentic sounding. And I like that sometimes when the kids are really upset, they howl like actual dogs.
Yeah, that made me think of the recent Ninja Turtles movie, Mutant Mayhem, came out a couple months ago as of this recording. And in that one, they cast actual teenage boys to voice the turtles and also encourage them to, like, hang out in the studio and riff on each other so they can develop dumb sibling inside jokes together. And that is very present in that film.
Ooze.
Ooze. All right, for the music on this, Joff Bush composed the theme song to Bluey and oversees the music for each and every single episode. Every episode is individually scored. There is no generic canned music that is recycled over and over. This decision was made by Brum, who noticed that avoiding such shortcuts really reaped dividends, creatively speaking, on Charlie and Lola. Bush likes to quote classical music in his Bluey scores, especially romantic composers like Beethoven and Mozart. However, for the Facey Time one, I notice that he is quoting Carmen.
Yeah, you will definitely. The classical music riffs are not subtle.
Bluey's soundtrack album is the first children's LP to top the charts in Australia, and it has won a whole bunch of awards that I don't recognize because they're Australian.
There's also a video game coming out soon that I'm interested in.
For the reception of this, I probably don't need to say this, but Bluey is massively successful and has won every single award that it is eligible for.
I'm not surprised. It was delightful. It won me over immediately.
Most of the trappings of a successful kiddie show franchise have already been foisted upon Bluey, including a traveling stage act and a balloon at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Haven't seen notices of an ice show yet, so they haven't conquered that hill yet. Bluey has been showered with critical accolades, largely for its playful tone, effective use of gentle humor, and its focus on familial love and support. Special attention has been given to Bandit, with many praising his characterization as a patient, supportive, and reliable father figure, something of a wholesome contrast to the negligent, abusive cartoon dads like Homer Simpson or Peter Griffin.
He's also, I feel like, very relatable and realistic, because he does make a lot of mistakes, but he handles them gracefully and with good humor, and he always takes accountability.
Based upon what I've read of Bandit going into this, I found a lot of echoes between him and Bob from Bob's Burgers.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, for all his faults, Bob genuinely likes his kids and enjoys spending time with them, as I mentioned on the Bob's Burgers episodes. He takes a special interest in their interests, and whenever the kids hatch a crazy scheme, he's a co-conspirator more often than he's an adversary to them.
Yep.
And I think you can say that about Bandit as well. So you got Bob and Bandit, and that is it for TV sitcom dads who actually seem to like their kids.
Oh, also, like Bob, Bandit is so in love with Chili. It comes up all the time. Every time they're playing an imagination game and he is roped into it, his character is without fail always absolutely amazingly in love with Chili. And Chili's character in their imagination games, not necessarily reciprocated. She teases him.
I like it. That's cute.
Three series have been completed as of this recording. Series is essentially British and apparently Australian talk for season.
Yep.
Brum says that Bluey is currently on hiatus, but that a fourth series will come eventually. There has been talk about a trilogy of film spin-offs.
There's also going to be a 28-minute length episode dropped soon. That's been all over my social media feed, which is a big deal because, you know, the episodes are 7 to 9 minutes usually.
I mean, the Looney Tunes don't usually do well when you give them an extended running time, but I think you can structure a longer Bluey episode without losing what makes the series appealing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's everything I put down in my notes, and I didn't really write down, like, specific themes because, well, I didn't really know what to say because I had seen one episode of Bluey leading into this. Although, interestingly enough, while doing the research for this, I found out that Ben Shapiro has founded a children's TV production company that he's selling as a streaming service, and, like, its lead thing is a knockoff of Bluey that involves chinchillas, and the dad chinchilla, the bandit animal, analog is voiced by Rob Schneider, and I watched the two episodes of that are available for free online, and it's not good.
No. Yeah, we talked about this a little bit on the way over. While I've been, like, looking around at Bluey merchandise and having more stuff, like, thrown in my social media feeds because of, you know, social media spying on you and selling your info to advertisers and everything, Bluey does have a decent amount of right-leaning fans, which puzzled me at first, although I feel like the show is, other than its focus on gentle parenting, like, aggressively neutral and, like, normative. It avoids anything that's going to be a divisive political issue. There's no queer characters. Everybody is very cishet normative. But the fact that it is a show that inherently values respecting others and being in tune with your emotions and stuff, I think if anything makes it lean more left than right.
I brought this up on the way over, but the heart of conservatism as an ideological framework is supporting the hierarchy, the stratified social hierarchy, seeing it as an inherent good and something that is natural and something that needs to be maintained through lots of violence often, and just this framework behind it of the people who are at the top deserve to be there, and the people at the bottom are failures and they deserve to be there, and that if you need to function in society, you have no inherent worth whatsoever. You need to prove yourself to be useful and compliant, and you will be thrown into the trash as soon as you are not useful anymore. The whole approach to gentle parenting kind of goes against that, and I was looking for that while watching Ben Shapiro's knockoff of Bluey. It's not quite there. Ben Shapiro's knockoff of Bluey isn't like PragerU Kids, where, you know, in PragerU Kids, Frederick Douglass will show up and explain to children that slavery was a necessary evil that was dispensed while creating the greatness of America, which if you know anything about Frederick Douglass, he would absolutely never fucking say.
Oh God, no. He would throw hands.
Giant hands.
But yeah, Ben Shapiro's Bluey knockoff is essentially trying to be Bluey, but it is written by fundamentally uncreative people who don't quite understand why people like Bluey. After seeing two episodes of that and then six episodes of actual Bluey, it was like, oh, okay. I can see where they, like, tried to take this and make it work, but they didn't, because they don't know anything more than, like, hey, let's do Moby Dick, except with toddlers.
And to tie it back to Muffin a little bit, You are not special. Everyone is special.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, that's like that line in The Incredibles where it's like, well, everybody being special is the same thing as nobody being special, except they're saying it from the, no, certain people are better than others, and you need to get out of the better people's way. And anybody who makes an argument like that, they probably think they're the better people and you should get out of their way. Throwing some Ayn Rand shit at you. So anyways, is there anything you'd like to add about Muffin as a character before we close things out?
Nah, just I like Muffin. She's great.
Yeah, that little girl, if she were real, was all set for the world. Gonna do just fine.
You're special, Muffin, no matter what they say. Thanks for listening, everybody. Join us next time.